Welcome to the DTS Fitness Education Podcast. The aim of the podcast is to give you usable content for you if you're a health and fitness enthusiast, or for your clients if you're a health and fitness professional. With different points of view and a little bit of fun, we break down information to give insights that empower and hopefully inspire through a lens of longevity and pain-free living for everyone. So stay tuned and enjoy. Today on the DTS Fitness Education Podcast, we've got Rachel France. Rachel is an expert in the fields of health, sport, fitness, and education. Her special interest is biomechanics, and she heads up an organization that teaches fitness and medical professionals how to screen and provide exercise interventions to prevent and manage injury, as well as improve performance. Rachel works closely with her team on all health, fitness, and education projects. So let's have a little listen and stay tuned. Welcome to the DTS Fitness Education Podcast. My name's Ben McDonald, and I am here with the mistress of movement, Rachel France. Woo!
The mistress of movement. I love it. You didn't tell me that one. I love it. Yeah, hi, guys. Nice to meet you.
How are you, Rachel?
Yeah, I'm really good. Weird times, but actually really excited to be speaking to you about all the stuff hopefully we're going to be talking about.
Fantastic. All right. So we are going to dive straight in. We're going to dive straight in and let's see what happens. So question number one, and this is a loose one. Why is movement so important for us as an organism, as human beings?
Well, you kind of almost said it there. Wasn't it Katie Bowman, I think, who said, you know, if you don't move, you die. You know, to put it really simply, if you think about without movement, you know, that we won't exist. You need to move to get your food. You need to move to use it. So along with nutrition and sleep, it's paramount. When you think about the, what are we? We are a multicellular organism, and yet we disrespect our bodies so much, which is why I think when people like you and I get in the industry and feel really passionately and strongly about it, it seems ironic when you see what people actually do to at the detriment of their health. And it's so simple to move, movement. And I like the fact we're using that word rather than exercise. We could have that conversation that, you know, and I'm an exercise professional. My certificate says exercise professional. And yet exercise, is that not like a replacement for lost movement in many cases? So movement is to perform a task, and you could take that right back to the caveman days where we were building fires, running away from saber-toothed tigers, picking berries, whatever it is we were doing back then. And then you look at movement today, there's a reason why we are exercising and have this entire industry based on the fundamental fact that we are not moving enough or properly. You know, when you look at the facts, I think I was doing a blog this week and it looked at, I think it's 37,000 UK deaths a year from physical inactivity. 37,000 deaths from not moving. So if that's not evidence enough. And then if you look on the World Health Organization website, they talk about 54% of the world's deaths are from their top 10. And when you look at those top 10, diabetes, you know, movement related issues, you think, well, should we not be just simply moving more? Movement reduces the risks of coronary heart disease. There's so many things. I can go through statistics, but when you break it down, I think one of the fundamental issues is people are looking at movement as exercise. When you look at clients, the ones we have to really cuddle, you know, and kind of almost coax into our business, our assistants, because they perceive movement as exercise, which is a chore, or they may not enjoy it, or they've got to be somewhere to do it, or they need equipment. And yet movement is just exactly that. You know, the simplest form of movement has now been promoted non-stop for the last 4 months. Go out and walk. So, you know, movement is ultimately going to keep us alive. And I think it's understanding the difference between movement and exercise, particularly from you and I chatting to each other, which is why I liked the way you positioned the question about movement rather than exercise. And I think that's probably one of the biggest problems, is anybody actually defining the difference? I think people are, but do the end user, do our clients realize the simple difference in those definitions? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe that's part of our job. What do you think?
Maybe. Education is part of it. And it's not, even if you're training a client, doesn't matter if you're in a classroom training a client, we're still in a role of education. And I think people think it's got to be so complex, Rach. And what they do is they jump to these complicated systems or complicated movements or whatever it may be. And I always find it funny when I talk to Stu McGill and he says, yeah, best thing to do if you've got back pain is walk. He said, just walk, that's it. You just walk. I was like, that's it. He said, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of my second sort of favorite influencers. You obviously know more about him than I do, but I've got several of his books. When he talks around spine health, I follow this stuff on YouTube, where he's done some stuff with some MMA guys. I really enjoy listening to and watch Katie Bowman, as I said earlier, from Move Your DNA. She's Canadian, isn't she, I think? And these guys, what they do, the language they speak will resonate with both you and I as a professional, but also our clients. So we can literally take what they've said and then say the same thing to a client and they'll understand it. And it's, you know, it's like we were talking earlier before we started the podcast. The simplification is paramount to people buying in and recognizing how easy it is to be physically more healthy, which, you know, I'm hoping we're going to go into more with some of your questions coming up.
Loose questions, Rach. Loose questions. Beautiful. All right. So question number two. If you could only use one movement assessment, what would it be and why?
So I'm quite famous in my classroom for never answering a question other than with another question. So the question you've posed me is, I've got an answer, don't panic, is almost impossible, because I would need to understand who is it for. I would need to understand why I've only got one choice. I would need to understand, is it for a beginner? Is it for somebody more advanced? What's the goal? So just with that caveat up front, for me personally, to be able to answer your question, when I think about the types of clients I work with, which is a mix, but predominantly strength athletes who are uninjured, don't really want to work with the injured. I prefer to work with people who want to lift heavier, get a better position on the receive in a clean, or run faster kind of athletes. So taking my own personal environment into account, I would probably say the squat. Now, that might sound like a cop-out. I don't know if I felt like that's what everyone would say, but then I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't assume anything, which is what I teach to my learners, don't assume anything. So why the squat? The squat is a fundamental movement. Back when we were hunter-gatherers, we used to sit down, ass to grass, A to G.
Yes, you can say that, mate. It's not a problem. Don't worry about it.
A to G, caveman squat, you know, to make a fire and things like that. Okay, we're not doing it now, but just the basic bodyweight squat could be a good indicator to you and I as a movement professional to understand the limitation in the ankle joint, dorsiflexion, knees, hips, the spine, maybe the arms. You know, if we've got the arms into a certain position, like an overhead squat, it can give us a lot of pointers. It's subjective, though. It's very much a subjective test, and so it would still leave a lot of questions. So what I would want to do to just challenge your question a little bit more is use a variety of squats to try and identify maybe where the limitations in the basic bodyweight squat come from. You know, you could obviously look at range of motion in a basic bodyweight squat. You could be looking at balance, maybe some coordination. We could also look at things like a split squat, so that we can understand, again, in isolation, sort of asymmetrical training. And I could also sort of challenge it into a kind of a semi-deadlifty squat. to break down some areas. So I was kind of getting really creative. But I think the reason I wanted to say all of that is we teach movement assessment, and it's what I really enjoy and I specialize in. We do that from an evidence-based perspective. So taking research-driven physical assessments with their history in clinical practice. But what we've done is design them for preventative measures, so you and I can access them as just a basic function of movement test. But actually, in application, all movement assessment on the human body is technically flawed. Even if it's evidence-based, even if it comes with great loads of research, and the reason for that is because we're all physically different. So how can you base a movement test on norms when there's huge populations out there who don't fit the norm of that research paper or that way of testing? So the question gave me a great opportunity to talk around that and really emphasize the way I try and help my learners work through understanding how to assess. I mean, you literally just assess what your client does in the office, at home. You just get them to move around. And then while there's some subjective, that's quite subjective, you're not kind of identifying specific areas, it gives you a good impression of areas that move well and maybe areas that don't move so well, so that you can start to systematically work through a program to improve their movement if you feel that's the case. But I think people seem to think that movement assessment is, and it can be really complex, but movement assessment is so simple. We do it all the time. Somebody walking along the street in front of us, and maybe this is just movement specialists, I don't know. You know, you look at the feet, one foot's turning out, they've got like a hip drop or a flick in the foot, or one shoulder's higher than the other. This is all my technical skills coming out in my technical vocabulary here. Flicky foot and wonky shoulders. But in terms of understanding how does that impact on our client, movement assessment can be really simple. All it is a benchmark. It's just a start point. So when a client walks in, it's like you see the fat loss client, so which is the easy one. You go, right, I'm going to photograph you today, and then we'll photograph you in 6 weeks. You do that, you kind of got that side shot, the front shot, and you see them losing body fat and changing shape. Movement is exactly the same. You could take videos and photos of just a side of the squat, you know, the front of the squat, and you go, right, okay, what we're going to do about that is the bigger question, I guess. Then you start to work with the client, take them through some interventions. You refilm and photograph that squat or deadlift or reaching in the cupboard or walking. And you go, actually, that looks better. How do you feel? And so it all comes back together to give you information. I think one of the strongest lessons I've learned over the years is nobody's actually knowing really what's going on inside of live humans. No one. It's yes. All a hypothesis. When we realize that, you know, people like you and I, who maybe occasionally we have that kind of imposter syndrome feeling where you listen to people who are dead technical and you go, oh my God, I wish I knew what you knew. It's so helpful to be able to translate to learners, PTs, movement specialists. Look, honestly, no one knows. The only thing we know is that's today. We're going to do this, and if it changes tomorrow, what we did probably worked. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. And it was a massive cheat, eh? Massive cheat. You was like, well, I would do the squat, but I'd modify it to a split squat and maybe a deadlift. You know, it's just like...
I love they're it. Kind of similar. Similar.
I think as a company, what we do is we have a systemized approach. So it's like step number one, assessment. Step number two, mobility. Step number three, stability. Step number four, groove the pattern, and so on and so on. These different steps in a system, up to 7 steps. Because I think people miss sometimes. You look at a movement, you're like, something's not quite right. Is it mobility? Is it stability? No. Or is it a motor engram? Has the person just learnt the movement in that way? And that's something that people, they say, oh, it's the Q angle. The adductors are firing up. Like if a lady of a certain age, let's say, squats, you get the front view. She squats down and the knees come in. Oh, it's the Q angle. The adductors are tight. It's this, and this. And you say, what do ladies get taught to do every time they sit down? They bring the knees together. So maybe we just say, hey, listen, your knees don't need to come to, you see what I'm saying? And they go, oh, really? Oh, yeah. And they've got it. So maybe it's a motor engram. It's not anything else. You see what I mean? So as you say, everybody is different and maybe has a potential different opportunity, you know?
And I think one of the biggest things, what I keep saying to people I speak to in the industry, but the guys in the classroom, is look, forget the muscles. Forget them. Look at the movement. Because the muscles are irrelevant. Even if you knew which one it was, it wouldn't change what you do. It's the movement that we're looking at. And the reason I want to mention that is anybody who's listening who has that anxiety about, I need to know more about the human body, I need to get a deeper level of understanding. I'm not taking away from that. You know, the more you know, the better. But the more you do know, we know the saying is, the more you realize you don't know. In terms of application of analyzing movement, watching a client move, whether you're a therapist, a personal trainer, it doesn't matter what your background, if you're in the business of human movement, the anatomy and looking at a human move, trying to work out the muscle is not helpful at all. Forget it. Yeah, go back to the classroom later on. What movement are they struggling with? Is it adduction? Is it rotation? Have they got a weird lateral flexion when they move? And that is going to be more helpful in your programming than trying to identify the individual muscles. I mean, I've seen 5-6 quads. I've seen triple-headed biceps. I've seen the same cadaver with a 26 mil ASIS on one side, 14 mil on the other side. So how does the anatomy attach there? If we're all that different on the inside, even working out the muscle attachments and where they go and you know, what's going on inside our client, it isn't helpful. And I think sometimes that's comforting. It certainly is for me when I'm watching someone move, because I know what ab and adduction look like. I know what that looks like. Quite confident, I can say, right, you don't do this. I don't know which muscle it is, but we can explore this route. Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. 100%. I like it. Personally, I follow Rach on Instagram. Girl, you've got some wheels on you, eh? And I'm not surprised you picked the squat, because it's like she's squatting. She's doing like a pistol squat. This squat, like, yes. So nice choice, mate. Nice choice.
Godzilla.
Okay. Question number 3. What activity would give a client the biggest bang for their buck? And that's like easiest, most accessible, whatever it may be for that particular client.
Okay. Same as the last question. I would need to know who they are, what the goal is. La, 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 la. Okay. We've got through all of that. So really easy walking. I'm with McGill on this one. Massive fan of walking. And actually that would cross over from somebody brand new to exercise, somebody overweight, somebody who's poorly, somebody who's fit, somebody who's an athlete. Walking and then the variations of walking. I'm going to use variations again, by the way, but can really have a positive effect on so many systems within the body. I guess the biggest limitation might be range of motion. But you could walk on an incline or steps. So you could then still take the walking, alter the environment to then use it as improving range or strength. You could alter the speed. You could carry something. So adapting walking a little bit rather than purely walking, but definitely walking would be it in terms of unique calories. And I think it was Katie Bowman again, just to come back to her, because I'm a huge, huge fan. She talks about the idea of carrying pumpkins. And you can have a 13 kilo single pumpkin, or you can have a bag full of 10 pumpkins. And that load is going to be different. It's still 13 kilos. But the way you carry them, a single 13 kilo pumpkin and then a bag of pumpkins, or, you know, it can change the dynamics and the force and the movement effects of the same exercise. So I really like that as the example. But I walk a lot. There's this idea about the smartwatches now, counting your steps. And if you think about, I've been in the industry about 30 years. Yeah, a long time. And when I started looking at, well, I think it was actually on my phone. You know, you've got the, on your iPhone, you've got the health app.
Yes.
And this was before the Fitbits came in, and I'm not promoting any models of watches or anything, but that was just one that came around. And I recognized when I looked at my health app, I was doing 800 to 12,000 steps a day. This was six, 7 years ago. And it was just when I'd set up my biomechanics education as an evolution from our old company. So I was sitting a lot. I was 7 days a week, 12, 13, 14, 15 hour days at my computer. And I was horrified. And even as a movement professional, I had lost that recognition. I was exercising. I was there for 16 hours. Then I did an hour of exercise and then came back and sat there for 12, 15 hours a day. And it was a real wake up call, even for someone who'd been around, you know, 20 odd years, to really demonstrate purely the acknowledgement I needed to walk more. And that's all I did. And I have been a walker ever since. I'm hitting sort of 15, 20,000 steps a day on a regular basis. I don't jump in the car and pop to the shop. I walk to the shop. I might use the time to listen to one of your podcasts.
Ooh.
And I walk to the shop. And take advantage of the time both for learning and for the movement rewards. So, yeah, absolutely a fan of walking.
As you said a little earlier, when it comes to exercise or when it comes to movement, I think people have the two really confused. Not confused, but they think that I'm going to the gym. I've been to the gym. The guideline is 3 times a week, I need to get in the gym. Yeah. So I get in the gym and I've done my 3 times a week. Fantastic. I looked at some research on movement, and they were talking about movement snacks are far more effective for people as far as the benefits of movement go than that 1 hour in a gym or like 3 times a week. You know, if you just intersperse your day, especially if you have a sedentary job. So if you intersperse like movement snacks and little movement breaks into what it is that you do, tends to show a better correlation to health and well-being.
100%. And I'm a desk worker. While I'm a movement professional, I am running a business. I'm selling, I'm marketing, I'm writing content. And so I'm actually standing at my desk here with my friend, by the way, my little skeleton in the background. And I have everything set up so that I can grab movement nourishment throughout the day. I actually wrote a little program over lockdown, literally for any user. I'm happy to send it through. And it's called Dynamic Desk. And it's not exercise. It's literally super simple stuff that you know, I have a box on my desk here where I've got my keyboard. I can move it out of the way. It's things like when I walk through the door, I might hang from it for a second. You know, just really simple stuff to help desk-based workers just add little nuggets, like you said, about, you know, periodically throughout. And I think it was on the World Health Organization website again, they talked about 10-minute nuggets are just as, or if not more, beneficial than, you know, doing a set amount of exercise, you know, a little block in the middle of the day or the end of the day.
Yeah, fantastic. Little movement snacks or little movement nuggets, as you just called them there. All right, next question. If you could pick only one movement-based exercise, which one would you use and why?
As the trend goes, well, it would be squats. The squats, as I said earlier, in terms of a movement measurement, but also an application, I think the squat can be have so many variables to it. You get goblet squat, back squat, overhead squat, front squat, barbell squat, kettlebell squat, you know, swinging squats, deadlift squats. And again, just purely from the kind of whole body effect, I'm aware that there are missing components potentially. However, you have set me the challenge of coming up with only one. So, yeah, it would definitely be squats. I'm trying to think what you'd miss. That's what I try and do is if you give me a challenge like that, I think, right, how can I make a squat hit the hamstrings or the chest? A prone kind of mountain climbery type squatting thing? Am I cheating now?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. I think, yeah, a little bit.
Oh, dear. Yeah, squats. Easy.
Nice. I like it. Squats, and especially for joint health, like joints are predominantly avascular, so they rely on that increase and decrease in pressure for health. So when you start looking at knee, ankle, hip, biggest joint replacement surgeries in the Western world Still knee, number one, but hip is catching up, eh? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely, you nailed it on the head there. I think another thing that we, one of our job roles, one of our duty of care, one part of our duty of care is to educate our clients on the idea that, you know, squatting A to G, is actually beneficial for joint health. Now, I'm aware there are some people out there who may not be able to go to full ranges for whatever reason. They have a joint replacement, they have an injury or something going on. However, in your regular client, it's probably something we should be aiming to help them towards. Because if you think about a squat and you think about ankle ranges, knee ranges and health, and then you think about the way you move around your environment. I remember working with a bodybuilder some years ago, amazing condition, but he was always told by the judges his hamstrings were not up to scratch in symmetry basis. So I worked with him and I watched him move in his house, and he literally couldn't even bend over in his lower cupboards. And we did something very simple in terms of we released his sciatic nerve, which gave his hamstrings room to let go, gave him more range through his squat, which was our benchmark. And all of a sudden his hamstrings were growing, and he wasn't actually training his hamstrings specifically any differently. We changed the soft tissue. We worked on the range through the knees, the hips, the ankle, and all of that collectively then made his hamstrings grow. And so there's this integrated system, which is the way the body works, where the joint ranges and the tissue ranges actually had this impact on his hamstring growth. As a bodybuilder, it was all about aesthetics and symmetry. And he actually went on to start winning trophies, and they commented on the quality of his hamstrings, which was just phenomenal. I mean, really exciting for both of us.
Oh, that's fantastic, mate. Like, real application, you know what I mean? And what we always say is, people get fixed on the gym, and getting the gym is like, you get better in the gym. The gym, for your average, everyday client, not people who are like elite level athletes, the gym should get you, should be getting you better at life. That should be the overall sort of outcome that you want, you know what I mean, with an average client.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I've always felt, I've worked with bodybuilders, I love going to bodybuilding competitions. I went 30 years ago where if you turned up and you were female, you got a trophy because you were the only female on stage, to now where you've got like 40 women on stage. So I've seen it go through evolution. But I'm not really, truly a fan of aesthetic personal training, training people for aesthetics. If you're going on stage, totally get it. But let's just push them aside for a minute. There's a massive percentage of personal training clients who come to us thinking what they want is an aesthetic goal. Okay, listen, I get it. You know, we want less cellulite. We don't want a muffin top. You know, you guys want bigger peaks on your biceps. Maybe the girls as well. Oops. Keep it up to date. But being realistic, a lot of them is coming in with aesthetic goals. And I always try and talk to them and say, well, why? Well, it made me feel better. Well, why? And you go through it all. It's like they just want to feel better. They want more confidence. When you get down to the crux of it, if we can teach people how to have a better relationship with their body and what they were born with, forget what they see in the magazines, discounting the people who go on stage for a minute, I'm talking about the other group, the other population, learn to love your own body, learn to recognize, you know, I am never going to have big biceps. I was born with the quads I've got. I'm quite sure when I came out, I had, you know, VMOs and huge quads when I came out. But no matter what training I've done, you know, trying to get balanced, trying to be aesthetically pleased, it's not going to happen. Genetically, I'm not there. I'd have to be assisted, or it'd be so much effort. I just don't want to spend that time on it. So trying to help our clients understand, just trying to be a healthier human, you will automatically gain your best aesthetics as a byproduct. So if we change the focus to a more realistic, achievable goal of feeling better and moving well, the aesthetics are going to come. If we use the aesthetics, we're probably never going to be really happy. You know, we're always going to look like, you know, one of the fitness models or Claudia Schiffer in my day. I wanted legs like Claudia Schiffer. She had that thigh gap thing going on, and I just had these I mean, do you know what I was told by a friend? He actually thought he was complimenting me when he said, "You've got legs like Stuart Pearce." And I was like, "Thanks, mate." So I can't change them. If I don't train, if I don't run, if I don't do legs, they will stay the same. And so I think it's helping clients to understand that in terms of goal setting as well.
Fantastic. And just for people who are listening, Stuart Pearce is an England international soccer player. Just because it's like, people will be like, "Stuart Pearce, who's that?" Was psycho, you know what I mean? And like anybody who's like, "I love Stuart Pearce, he's fantastic." All right, so number five, what are your top tips for movement improvement?
All of the above, plus, I mean, basically, it's recognizing, I think, the importance of preparation technique. So you've alluded to your system in terms of assessment, mobilize, stabilize, and so on. And ours is not dissimilar. So we use a system of approach, again, whereby you take you work with the body in parts, so pelvis, spine, shoulders, knees, and feet. You understand how the myofascial, skeletal, and neural system work collectively. And so you systematically work through the body. I think what certainly in the UK, I'm not sure about over where you are, but what we've been missing in our basic training as exercise and movement professionals are what have come out of rehab. And they're now coming out as trends in prehab and post-rehab. And it's things like the muscle energy techniques. We're getting there now. They're coming around. Nerve mobilizations. I think the one that we are most familiar with is joint mobilizations. So alternatives to stretching, which I think would, in my world, the ones that we teach are deemed, I see them as much safer or least contraindicated of all the movement preparation techniques. 20% low grade static contraction, anyone can do it. They can do it on themselves. PNF, you need some assistance to some degree. So have you ever come across something called Occam's razor?
Occam's razor? No.
Occam's razor, O-C-C-A-M hyphen S, razor like the razor. So Occam's razor is a theory about using the kind of least contraindicated intervention in the beginning, and you kind of shave away, right, that did or didn't work, we'll use that or we won't. Then you apply another intervention. And it's really that kind of model of systematically taking a client through techniques of assessment, intervention, assessment, intervention. You do input, output, and over time you see the techniques, the interventions that made the difference, and those ones are the ones that become our clients' biomechanical pillars of movement improvement, if you like. You're nodding away, so I'm sure without experiencing your program you have something similar, and I think there's weight in us experiencing each other's training. I don't see us as being in competition. I always encourage people, go do their training, do ours, put all the systems together, make your own, you know, Rachel France movement system program with your clients. And then you've got all these tools to pull out the bag, whatever comes in your door as a client, and what you can pull something out and use whatever you think is appropriate. So learn about basic movement preparation techniques. I'm not talking about exercises, preparation for, because we've got into the state we're in over the last 40, 50 years. It's not going to happen overnight. We've got to bring ourselves back out of this sedentary lifestyle, or recognize we're always in it. So we have to keep doing these. That it's not like you move better, right, that's it now. It's like you have to practice this on a regular basis. So once you've done that, as long as you're consistent, and then you start to build with our help, maybe a kind of movement profiling of biomechanical pillar exercises, body parts, and so on, you can start to intersperse it into your day, your movement nuggets throughout the day. And then your training can be the fun bit where you build the ability to swim faster, lift heavier, or do your squats or whatever it is you do. So use movement preparation and then do it consistently.
Love it, mate. I love it. The next step in the system that we have, what we do is reassessment. So it's just very, very similar. So you reassess. Yeah. And then we always say to people, the beauty of a system is you can move forward in it, but also you can move backwards in it. So if you get that reassessment and you're like, do you know what? There's been no change. No problem. You just move backwards in the system. Try a different mobility. Try a different stability. Maybe they need a little more groove in the pattern or whatever it may be in order to change. So it's just very, very similar, mate. Very similar. I love it.
Can I do your course, by the way? I really want to do your course.
Only if I can do yours, Rach. Only if I can do yours.
Let's swap.
Okay. Question number 6. When it comes to movement, what areas tend to get overlooked?
The nervous system, 100%. We are soft tissue, bony practitioners in a simplistic sense. But in terms of areas that I feel our industry generally is lacking is understanding nerve inhibition and how the nerves will inhibit muscle function and performance has been shown through research. How very quickly we can demonstrate with some of our testing. I'm sure it would be the same as some of yours, which is why I like to mix and match other concepts where you can do nerve mobilization and improve spinal velocity by over 200% within, you know, like literally doing 3 sets of 15. We did a study, it was only anecdotal, on quad strength output after mobilizing the sciatic nerve at the back of the leg. Quad strength output improved by 50% in 10 days. So when you get this kind of evidence, you think, well, for those out there who don't naturally grow quads like mine, maybe mobilizing the nervous system. And I think if we can really cotton on to that, in my professional experience, it isn't the first place I go, but it's quite often the place when I get to it, the magic happens. Understanding how to test the nervous system, understand how it functions, where it is and everything else. And then how to move it. I think we've been, excuse the pun, made nervous about talking about nerves because it's thought of when it's problematic as a clinical issue. Prior to it being a clinical issue like carpal tunnel or sciatica, it is something you and I can solve with movement. So if we understand nerve mobilization techniques and the ability to test and understand how much and the dosage and everything else, we can actually reduce the risk of clients getting the clinical issues like carpal tunnel, tennis elbow, and sciatica. So understanding the nervous system, definitely.
Nice. I like it, Rach. I like it. I like it. Boom. I like it, mate. I like it. All right.
If I had a mic, I'd drop it. Is that one?
I think that's how it works. I'm not too sure. My daughter would be like, Dad.
I've got one.
Nice. Okay. Rach, what's been going on with you? What's been happening?
Oh, wow. Well, I think, you know, we are sort of, where are we? Early August 2020. So lockdown is kind of starting to ease up here in the UK. I think I've been through that Kubler-Ross curve of emotions like most other people have, where shock, numbness, denial, fear, anger, depression. Let's just bloody carry on and do whatever we can. And I think many years ago, I became a counsellor. I learned counselling skills. And one of the real gold dust things that I learned about was a circle of control, circle of care. And you write into your circle of control all the things you can control. And you write into your circle of care all the things you can't. And then you rip up the circle of care and acknowledge, right, let's not think about all that stuff. So that's really how I coped with lockdown. My primary concern was my learners that were already paying me for things I knew they would not get. So what I did, I dived straight into, right, and I'm not techie at all, I'm in my 50s, so I didn't grow up with it. I grew up with Binatone and Atari, so that's how old I am. So I learned Zoom, I got my mic, I got my ring light, I got my, you know, I got all my gadgets together. And I offered live classrooms to my learners. So in a long roundabout way of getting to the response to your question, you know, I, like everybody else, have been in a painful place. However, being a proactive and positive character, what I've seen is an opportunity. I don't want that to be said without recognizing the horror that some people have been through and the trauma. I just want to acknowledge that as well. So I'm not underplaying that. However, getting on with what we can do, how can I help? How can I offer my service to help my people serve their people, even in this environment? So what we put online was all of the theory, the movement assessments that could be done visually through a screen, or even now potentially face to face without putting your hands on them, so that it's an opportunity for people across the world to now access those online programs on our website, where they can go, they can get an insight into our models, our system, similar to yours. They can see how that works, understand how we encourage you to challenge everything, and actually take away some movement assessments and those movement improvement techniques I was talking about, some of the nerve mobilizations, to be able to apply it right now. So even if a practitioner listening to this is vulnerable themselves and so shielding and at home, they can use it. If a practitioner has decided, I love this online lot, I'm not going back to face-to-face, they are great resources. You can go and access those and use them online. So it's been an amazing opportunity for all of that. It's made me realize I wanted my own studio. So as we speak, I have a field of mud. I no longer have any grass in my garden. It's all been flattened, ready for a large studio, which will be for filming. And one of the things I've always wanted to have is an environment where I can literally, at any time of the day, and I'm an early bird, I'm a 5 a.m.er, so I'll get up and I can just film content. So my plan is, moving forwards, once it's all built, middle of August, to start filming content, webinars, practical information that I can then put onto the website. We've got a team of master trainers now, or a bigger team. They are international, but predominantly UK. There's 10 guys from all sorts of backgrounds who are helping out, because we are fully booked the rest of this year. I'm starting to realize I can't do everything as much as I love my job. So these guys are phenomenal. And I'm also looking at working with a lot of other people now that I might hopefully have a bit more time to forge more collaborations and strategic, you know, partnerships. People like you guys, even though you're over there, I mean, I'm really enjoying this conversation with you guys, and I'm now fascinated. I want to learn your program, so I want to, you know, kind of share that. But ultimately, yeah, we are both. I am still a fan of the classroom, but maybe like you guys, I'll start to look at what can I do virtually. So in a live webinar, I enjoy interaction. So I found that in one way kind of slightly challenging, but in another way where I have felt my weaknesses, like my vocabulary. I always feel like my vocabulary is one of my weak points, and I've been forced to start to think about what I'm saying, because I can't get in the environment with them and move them and say, no, you've got to go here. I've got to, you know, verbalize it. So what I'm hoping is, if I can get better at that bit, more of the live classrooms where we can start showing people a few of our ideas and sort of how to test and challenge it. We're always open. I love being challenged, kind of. I like being challenged because it makes me think. You know, one of the best experiences I had was I was trolled badly after a comment. I think it was Mark Ripto's squat. And it was in a biomechanics Q&A, and I'm a massive fan, by the way. If he ever hears this, I've got his books and everything, but what I said was taken out of context. So the ability to be able to be online and say things like this, to verbalize it through podcasts and videos, so I'm hoping that it'll go more down that route. But I forgot, there's that little thing, like Friday I'm getting married.
You're getting married on Friday. Woo!
I'm not going to be a spinster.
There's a lot to be said for spinsters.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, 52, I'm finally getting married. He's fantastic. He's amazing. I couldn't be happier. I can't wait. So that's kind of like, I'm obsessed at the minute. So until Friday's here, I'm slightly distracted. Forgive me.
Everybody listening is going to be like, congratulations. And if you're listening, you've got to shout it. You've got to shout it so everyone comes running in. Fantastic. So, Rach, what is the website? What's your website?
www.biomechanicseducation.com.
Fantastic. And that will be all the links to everything that Rachel's been talking about will be in the description of the podcast. So you can click on that, go straight to Rachel's website, see exactly what she's been doing and what's been going on.
There's loads and loads of content on our YouTube page, Biomechanics Education, and also Instagram at biomechanics_education. I just chuck content out there. Some of it, I'm afraid, is me or Coach Broxy. Have you met Coach Broxy?
No.
The dog? My little coach, my old English bulldog. Yo, you've got to go and see. He's got his own YouTube channel, Coach Broxy, by the way. But anyway, Biomechanics Education. Go and have a look.
Excellent. And again, like the YouTube link will be in the description and the at Instagram thing will be in the description as well. So you bounce off, we'll get all that put in. Now, the question that you have been waiting for. This is the one. All right. Now, I know you've been listening to a couple of podcasts, but you can't just be like, well, it depends on this, and this. You know what I mean? Who would win a fight between a saltwater croc and a great white shark, and why?
Well, coming from my background, I listened to the other guys. I listened to their versions, their responses. And I thought about it for a while, and I thought, I'm going to say to him, I need to know, are they in shallow water or deep water? It's going to come back. And then I realized, well, I'm going to be saying that for all of the previous questions. That's not really fair. So what I'm going to do is, like everything, when I'm challenged with a question that I don't know the answer to, I do my research. So there's a guy called Henry Liu who works at the National Australia. Like, he says that neither will be able to kill another outright, but a great white is more likely to die from its injuries. Now, I've got a whole article here that talks about bite force, tooth type, armor, jaw size, and if you want it, I can send it through. But basically, I'm going with what Henry says, the croc would win.
Who am I to argue with Henry?
The croc would win. He's got the armor. The shark has got soft tissue, you know, he's going to be easy to chew up. He may have a bigger jaw, but he's not got the same amount of force. So if anybody listening wants the link to the article, I did my research, the croc would win.
That's fantastic. Brilliant. I love it when people pull research out. I think it's fantastic.
I couldn't believe I found it. I was like, I'm just going to stick it in the internet search. I was like, there's an article that's arguing it all. It's all in there. So if you want to see it, I'll send it through.
Yes. All right. Rach, thank you very much for coming on and speaking to me. I really appreciate it. I'm going to finish it with a go, Rachel Franz!
That was the DTS Fitness Education Podcast. You can follow us on social media or visit us at dtsfitnesseducation.com for more knowledge applied. Remember, there's a new episode weekly. So thanks for listening and go DTS Fitness Education!